This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Wild cars, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. I'm Drew Scanlon. Joining me, Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing fantastic. This was a race that was on at Saturday night, and it freaked me out, and also qualifying was on before it. What's going on?
Yeah, weird one for sure. Not a weird one, Rob Zachney. How are you, Rob?
Not bad. This race, I decided the smart play was to watch it off F1 TV later.
Yeah, you on the East Coast?
Yeah, especially, and that way the weather couldn't screw with my DVR.
Okay, yeah. Welcome to the podcast. If you are new here, if you're new to Formula One, that is, we recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge and gives the lowdown on how the sport works and who everybody is. This year's primer is episode 59, if you want to listen to that. Also, the show is supported entirely by our audience at patreon.com/shiftf1. Every month, we release at least one bonus podcast and video exclusively for our patrons, covering racing documentaries and films, video games, primers for other series, and a lot of weird things. So if you'd like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What do we got going on this week, Danny?
On Friday, seeing as we don't actually have a race this weekend, we're publishing our... we've moved from documentaries over to documentaries of a different sort.
Films, Danny. Art.
Art, yes. So if you're a fan of Robert Duvall, Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, man, I was not surprised. I was very surprised at some of the... Michael Rooker? John C. Reilly?
All-star cast.
Unbelievable. Days of Thunder, our review of that is going up on Friday. We'll also have some F1 game history this week. I spent 6 hours connecting my PlayStation 2 off to this PC on Friday. It was a nightmare. The videos are coming this week.
Boy. Well, speaking of Japan, Danny...
Yes.
And Rob, let's get right into this Japanese Grand Prix. As you mentioned, kind of a weird one because of the typhoon that rolled in. As we mentioned, there was a chance, and this occurred, of qualifying being canceled and moved to Sunday. So everyone basically had a free Saturday, which was kind of fun because we got to see how F1 drivers fill their time. Did you guys see Roman Grosjean went to a hobby shop in Japan and bought a model car kit to build of the six-wheeled Formula Perfect. One car?
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Where is this on YouTube or?
He posted some pictures on his Twitter. I can link that for sure. But it's like a really, you know, it's a Japanese model. So it's really intricate and really cool. Also, I think Sainz, Verstappen, and Norris all played FIFA in Max's hotel room because he apparently brings a like briefcase of a PlayStation 4 with him.
This is such a different generation of F1 drivers. Like, like this is not the, you know, gallivanting around town of womanizing world of James Hunt. Neither is it the, you know, self-serious lone, you know, competitor of Michael Schumacher. This is just a bunch of lads playing FIFA. I love it. It's like a dorm or something.
Yeah, but I'm also so curious, like, what happens when these dudes begin moving into closer comp? You know what I mean? Like, right now, the dynamic's a little easier because, like, Max is probably in the most competitive car of any of them, and he's not racing his homies.
Yes,
that often totally. For position. But, like, does the FIFA game start to get weird if, like... Like, what if Charles was part of their crew, right? What if prior to this, Charles had been part of their, like, gaming crew? What is the vibe in that hotel room? That's the thing I'm curious about. Like, in a couple of years, like, when Norris is really starting to push people around on track or something, I am so curious if they're still hanging out and playing FIFA together.
Totally. I've been watching some of the Norris and Verstappen iRacing streams, which have been it's really weird. It feels like voyeuristic. It feels like you're like watching your celebrities friends hang out or something. It's so strange. But yeah, totally. It reminds me of, like, you know, Danny Ricciardo and Max got on like a house on fire when they were first on the team. They kind of had that same vibe you see with like Lando and Carlos, you know. And during this race, we kind of got maybe the first instance of maybe some of those folks knocking into each other and how they'd react afterwards. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I wonder who's the best at FIFA. I bet it's Lando.
Also, something that happened, they also canceled Free Practice 3, but as a result, again, of the typhoon, apparently when Formula One comes to a racetrack, they've got to set up all the camera switching gear, and they do that in a big tent, apparently, at least on this racetrack.
Hmm.
Tents aren't great in typhoons, so they had to move all of that stuff, like all of their video switching equipment and cabling and everything, into two of the garages in the pit lane.
Oh, wow.
And so what is normally in those garages are like the safety cars and medical cars. So they like parked those in a walkway and switched the race from the pit lane. And apparently they did that in like some record amount of time because they had to tear it all down and put it back up in a process that you normally takes like 3 days or something.
That's crazy.
They talked about it, I think, a little bit in the Paddock Pass on F1's YouTube channel. There's a streamable.com link from, I think, a Sky thing that I can link in the show notes for as long as that'll stay online. But pretty remarkable. Also notable in qualifying, Robert Kubica crashed in Q1, tearing off a wheel, which required a chassis change. And again, the race is 3 hours from the end of qualifying, so they rebuilt his car in just a little over 3 hours in time for the race, which was, again, another Herculean effort. Also, for a team that's worried about parts, not great.
That was the first thing I thought when I saw him in the wall. I was like, didn't they retire you last race to avoid this specific incident? Exactly. But I also wondered, I noticed when they showed the replay, they showed the wind speed around the circuit at the time of the accident. And I do wonder, was there some like wild crosswind that was playing havoc? Because who was it who lost it in Q1 at the same place? Was it
Magnussen?
It was Magnussen.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder, like, was there just a stiff wind that was basically stealing the rear downforce from these guys the exact moment they're starting to put power on?
It was weird, though. The interview with Kubica after the fact, he kind of... I was waiting for him to say that, but he didn't. He said that there was multiple things going on. And, I'm not really going to get into it, but, like, something that happened with the car before it left the pit. So was that him referring to the front wing thing, I wonder?
There was... On the radio, like, with the car in the wall, he just called it, I think, like, what a fucking joke, or something like that. And later he put his hand up and was like, yeah, I lost the car. But you're right, there was a weird vibe around it, and I think we'll get into why there might have been a weird vibe. But, like, even at the time, it was noticeable that, like, he seemed disgusted, not with himself, but with, like, everything.
The situation, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Renault also had some problems the technical arena. I think suspension for Ricciardo and hydraulics for Hülkenberg. Ferrari, though, looked great, and Vettel smashed the previous track record on pole over Charles Leclerc by 0.2. Also, Alexander Albon qualified with the exact same time to the millisecond as Max Verstappen. And
that's
crazy. Think in the rule book, the one who sets the first or sets the time first lines up ahead, which is Verstappen in this case. But yeah, I mean, in a track that Albon has not raced a Formula One car in before, qualifying the exact same time as Verstappen, pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You want to take us through the start, Danny?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a weird one.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot going on. I mean, I feel like we talked about false starts in recent weeks in relation to Kimi's.
Oh, you know what? Let me run down the grid first.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Sorry about that. Sebastian Vettel, like I said, on pole. Then we got Charles Leclerc, his teammate, right behind. Then we got Valtteri Bottas edging out Lewis Hamilton for third and fourth. Max Verstappen in fifth, Alexander Albon in sixth. Then we've got Sainz and Norris, the two McLarens, in seventh and eighth. Pierre Gasly in ninth and Roman Grosjean in tenth. Then behind them, Giovinazzi, Stroll, Raikkonen, Kvyat, Hülkenberg, Ricciardo, Perez, Russell, and Magnussen. Kubica starting from the pit lane. Mm. Magnussen penalized 5 grid places for a gearbox change. Yeah, and that's your grid.
Cool. Should we get into it?
Do it.
All right. Lights out. They were up for maybe I'd say a hair longer than we had. Was it last race? I think they were up for quite a long while, which is when Kimi had his false start. This time, Vettel had a little bit of a shuffle, and DiResta called it out almost immediately on the commentary, but it took a little while for us to see what had actually happened. Basically, he did a false start, but only inched forward maybe, I don't know, was it like 2 or 3 inches maybe in total, right before the lights happened, stopped the car. Then when the lights turned off, he went. Of course, in so doing, totally banjaxed his start, which meant that he was getting gobbled up by everyone, and also the people behind him were getting gobbled up as well, as that sort of that concertina effect happens. So basically, Bottas swings around the outside, dives into first place. Vettel gets behind him, and then we're sort of 3x3 with Hamilton, Leclerc, and Verstappen, who is taking the outside line and has had a good start himself. As they're approaching turn 1/turn 2, because it's that little funny one, Verstappen is basically around the outside of Leclerc. Hamilton is tucked in, and as Leclerc is rounding that turn and he's caught in I guess he's in the toe of Vettel, or he's in the backwash of his dirty air, he loses a bit of downforce and edges out to the right, where Verstappen is basically maybe quarter of a car lengths ahead of him. Dives his front wing into the side of Verstappen's side pod. Basically spins him. His tires are locked up. He's damaged his floor, and he's out. But Leclerc manages to, I guess, retain enough momentum out of that incident to keep the position up into third. But it basically... ruined Max's start, put him in last, and ultimately sort of ruined his race.
Yeah, Verstappen pitted immediately. But even though Leclerc had a little bit of damage to his front wing, he kept going. Also on the start, Norris jumped up from 8th place by the first turn, was tangling with Hamilton, which is super cool to see.
There's a couple of good ones. Hülkenberg had a mighty start.
Yeah.
I think he gained something like 5 or 6 places off by the time turn 2 was done.
Yeah, and he said over the radio to his engineer, like, hey, did you see that?
Yeah.
Lap 2, Leclerc doesn't pit. And then his end plate, which is the part that's damaged, on the left side of his front wing, is like rattling around and sparking on the ground. It flies off, damages Leclerc's left mirror on its way by, and then like flips around his car and takes out Hamilton's right mirror, who's right behind him, explodes on the track. Carlos Sainz dodges it, and then apparently a bunch of that carbon fiber went into Norris's brake ducts, who was right behind Sainz.
Yeah, and Hamilton throughout this time is calling it out because he's eating a bit of it. And it seemed like one of those situations. At this time, there's also like crazy team radio going on between Leclerc and his pit wall. Again, I wish I knew when exactly all of that was coming through, because it was hard to tell if they were taking it too seriously too late. But it seemed like just lack of communication or something. And then also the race directors didn't seem to want to take out the donut flag either for him, even though there was pieces of car being thrown in Hamilton's face. The whole thing just seemed very odd.
It was a weird thing, because You're right. Like, I couldn't figure out what the timing on those radio messages was, but at the same time, Ferrari has access to live shots as well, plus all the telemetry. So they were seeing the same things we were, which should have been the cue. You need to come in. You can't be driving around like that. We're already maybe in hot water, but the notion that, like, you're going to be, well, one, it almost seemed like they were going to be allowed to just run around the circuit with a piece of their wing hanging off because the stewards were slow to react. But two, it was really surprising that they weren't really forceful and just demand him come in right away. And that's a dynamic I don't get. It seems like every... I like Charles. I really do. It increasingly feels like every radio message with him is a debate, and something's going wrong there. Either the team needs to be clear when things are not up for debate, or they're just so laconic on the radio that he never like, is this an order? Is this a, it would be nice. Maybe we should, like, he seems uncertain about what he's getting from them, and they do not seem to be clear about like what is right and necessary right now. The other thing that was wild about this was, at some point you think it's going to stop throwing part like pieces of metal, right? Like, it's when you start getting the high-speed replays and you start realizing how much crap is being thrown off by that one dangling bit of wing, it seems physically impossible that that much shrapnel could be generated from a tiny little flap. And yet, like, once you slowed it down, you started to realize he was really hurling a lot of debris around
and enough to damage his car and another driver's car. Like, what are the, you know, the odds of a tiny piece taking out both wings? It was obviously like a lot of stuff because it wasn't going to take out two mirrors if it was just one tiny piece. So it must have been a lot. But yeah, I'm totally with you. I feel like in Leclerc's defense, and I don't know the dynamics of the relationship between them and the communication that's going on there, but it does really feel, and maybe this is, I feel like this is something we've touched upon in previous episodes as well, that regardless of whatever strategy Ferrari are doing, it never feels like they're being assertive. It always feels like this sort of like wishy-washy, you know, and in the heat of the moment like that, like, it was weird for him to be like, hey, it's not as bad as you, and maybe it looks bad, but it doesn't feel bad. But he can't really see what's going on. So it's crazy that they don't like say, I don't know, but you never know.
Yeah.
Maybe they really, really didn't want to bring him in. Maybe that was just, you know, and this was their way of sort of trying to weasel their way past the race director listing. Like, I don't know, but it increasingly, I feel like this is not the first time we've had the two, you know, Leclerc talking to his pit wall and there being this just vagueness. Like, it seems so strange when everyone else is so direct. Like, listen to Bono and Hamilton, and it's just like data point, question, data point. It's so, it's like a fighter jet. Whereas, like, when Leclerc sounds like he's ringing up his fucking ISP.
I wrote down when they tell him box, he replies with, why don't we continue a little bit more?
Yeah.
And I was like, is this a real F1 radio transmission? Like, I hear you're called a box, but what I propose is let me just run this up the flagpole, see if anyone salutes it. What if we didn't box? And we just drive a few more laps and just see what happens.
But let's just keep going. Maybe the next gas station has a subway. Like, let's just, we're fine. Let's keep going.
But is this like fourth dimensional chess where this, like, as you sort of intimated there, is Ferrari trying to look like they're trying to do something when really they're keeping track position, and more importantly, they are keeping is Charles still somehow ahead of Hamilton at this point? I think he is.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So
he retained position.
Yeah, of course. That's where the debris that's where the debris goes in Hamilton's face. But like, are they called, also...
Which I laugh, but like, legitimately, that could have hurt somebody.
Yeah, yo, that's a big piece.
Yeah.
It's like a foot and a half.
Felipe Massa was rendered unconscious for... I mean, granted, that was a bolt or something, but like, debris coming off cars is no laughing matter when the cars are traveling at that speed. I mean, the relative speed, I guess, would be the same in that instance, but like it's super dangerous.
Right. But are they basically trying to make a show of like, damn, we tried to get ahead of that wing situation, but you know, it was confusing. Things were fluid.
This is the meantime, radio version of when they pretend to come out into the pits.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, Hamilton is falling farther and farther behind Vettel, who they have to think is going to be able to claw some of this back, given that the pace advantage Ferrari's had for much of the weekend.
Right.
I think this might be a good time to just jump to what the stewards did with Leclerc after the race, because they handed him actually two penalties. One for his collision with Verstappen was a 5-second time penalty, and then a 10-second time penalty for driving in an unsafe manner, which, you know, comes from the fact that he was dangling parts from his car. But if you're gonna weigh in on that and say that was dangerous, that doesn't seem like a judgment call on what someone's intention was, right? That's, you can see what's happening there. Why, if you're going to hand down that penalty, why didn't you show a flag?
Flag, yeah, and it's worth mentioning as well that during the race, the incident was opened relatively quickly, said that they weren't going to do anything else on it. And then I feel like 5 or 6 laps later was reopened. And they said they'd finish it after they'd figure it out after the race, which also
just, I think it may have been the Verstappen thing.
Yeah,
that was specifically the Verstappen thing. Yeah, yeah, but it just, that whole element just seemed, as a viewer of the sport, it was a nightmare because it meant that there was an asterisk over whatever Leclerc was doing at all times. So you kind of feel like you're out of the loop on that one.
But I have a statement from Massey, FIA race director, about that specifically. He says that originally, with what was available to the stewards, they made a determination that no investigation was necessary. Then they got some other footage, which they didn't have, and well within their rights, it was a new element, and they reopened it.
Somebody tweeted it onto Streamable.
Oh, really?
No, I'm only kidding. What footage did they not have? Like, what?
Yeah, I don't know.
It might have taken them a couple minutes to get all the angles, but it did, I guess, to me, it did look maybe a little bit more like a racing incident in the moment. And then when you get a slightly wider angle, you realize how much racetrack Leclerc, I guess, just the pronunciation thing is throwing me. It is so weird to be like, have the dude introduce himself as Charles Leclerc, and then it's Leclerc all the way down. But whatever. It is, once you could see clearly how much track Leclerc had to work with at that point, he went out of his way to sort of cut Verstappen off. And I don't know. I feel like, to an extent, karmically, Verstappen did a lot of the stuff like this early in his F1 career, but it's been a while since I've seen that much that's egregious from him. Meanwhile, it really feels like ever since Austria, Charles has been maybe one of the most sharp elbow drivers out there, to the point where I think it's bad form. I think we are, and not only that, but like to this question we've been returning to again and again, what kind of F1 do you want? Good hard racing is one thing, but at the same time, I would have preferred to see I would prefer Charles and Max to be able to race each other and see how that is resolved on the track, you know, the move and counter move, rather than them being so dangerous around each other that like Charles resolves it every time by shunting Max off the track. That sucks.
Yeah, he did on Twitter take responsibility for that. He says, my mistake in turn one, it ruined Max's race and put ourselves in a bad position for the remainder, I guess, of the race. Mexico next.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like I think it was a mistake more than intention. It did seem like he got a bit of oversteer when Vettel cut across his air there. But he should have left more space. I think to me, it felt a little bit weird where in this year they're being so lax about the sort of rubbing his race in-ness of this sort of stuff. I don't necessarily think it could have gone either way kind of for me, but it seemed sloppy from Leclerc rather than mean.
But here's the thing. It's right at the start of the race. Everyone is going through that corner. Everyone is losing air in front of them. Everyone is losing front downforce. It's only Charles you see lurch.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't even buy that he lost. I'm saying I don't even buy that he lost air over the wing, and that's what caused him to massively understeer like that. I think the start of the race at that speed, that probably is not going to be the thing that makes him do that. It's going to be he took an angle.
And I guess I just to watch the onboard and his wheel doesn't like he loses. He doesn't like turn in or he doesn't straighten out. But yeah, I know it's like he also should. He knows in that situation, as every other driver knows, what's going to happen with his, you know, it's not like the gust of wind thing that happened maybe with Kubica. It sucked. It was ultimately it really sucked for Verstappen as well.
Yeah, and Leclerc did finally pit on lap three, so the running order becomes Bottas in first, Vettel in second, Hamilton third, Sainz in fourth, and Albon in fifth.
Those McLarens.
Speaking of lap four, Albon on Norris. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did I say that running order right then?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, it is.
Sainz ahead of Norris. Yeah.
Albon on Norris.
Okay. Yeah. Who wants to take us through this one?
This is the chicane after 130. All right.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Just Alexander Albon decides to. Like take a corner, like when you're playing the video game.
Yeah,
you just like break
bombs down the inside.
At least he did it somewhere where there's a pretty hefty escape road. But yeah, he just shunts Norris off the track. He kept the place as well, didn't he?
He did. I think they. And did the stewards even say anything in the end?
I don't think so.
I think the drivers talked about it after the race. I think Norris later said it was a hard move, but I'm glad there was no action. That was the comment I saw from him.
Cool.
So yeah, like some nice gamesmanship. Certainly, I think it was a weird thing because if you look, like when I looked at the replay, Albon had him. It wasn't close. It wasn't like he was creating an opportunity that wasn't there. He had a good run. And he was coming fast, and like, you know, there was a little bit of daylight. He took it, and Norris would have had to really aggressively slam the door on that. And so, like, to me, it was a little edgy, but I don't think Albon was driving like a jerk. I think he had such a good run on Norris that suddenly a non-traditional line presented itself.
Right. Are we saying Albon was suffering a little bit because of the carbon fiber in the brake ducts?
It was Norris.
Oh, that was Norris that had that.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Rob, how would you compare and contrast this Albon move and past Leclerc moves?
Well, see, I think with Leclerc, I think sometimes I see this being more defensive. And so, like, the one that's freshest in mind is Monza, where I thought literally he was basically trying to deny space to another racer that was making a fair move. This, to me, felt like Albon had a pretty clear run, and then it was two cars going into one. But it didn't necessarily feel that far out of bounds. But I don't know. Like, is there a particular Leclerc incident that you have in mind that you're thinking about? Where?
No, I think you're right. The ones that come to mind for me are on the defense. Maybe, yeah. I mean, Verstappen getting by Leclerc in Austria, or was it Canada where he bumps him off?
No, it was Austria because that was where Leclerc, like that was sort of his origin story. right? Like he was a mild-mannered Monegasque Formula One driver. And then in Austria, he got bumped off the track and turned into...
by a radioactive Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
Speaking of Leclerc, he's making a lot of moves in the backfield. After that pit stop, he gets by Verstappen on lap 9 on the start-finish straight. Gets by Kvyat on lap 12 on the inside, a spoon, and then Raikkonen just before 130R on lap 14. And then one lap after that, Verstappen does retire into the garage. And then lap 17, pit stops. Vettel pits and goes from soft tire to soft tire, tipping his hand into a two-stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, haven't seen many of those this year.
No, and Bottas covers him on the next lap. So then Hamilton's in the race. He then pits on lap 21. So no one after that loses a place in the top three. So it's still Bottas in first, Vettel, and then Hamilton. And Hamilton, at least I know, puts on medium tires. What does Bottas do?
Mediums as well.
Yeah.
Not for a while, though. And this is where we begin to get into it.
Yeah, so this is... this becomes a tire strategy race. Lap 24, Hamilton and his engineer are talking about their options. Bono, his engineer, says, "You're currently P3, Vettel 10 seconds ahead. Deg looks very high, so one stop will be a struggle. Let's chase Vettel down." Hamilton asks how Valtteri is at the moment. Bono replies, "He's nearly got a full pit stop on Hamilton." And then Hamilton's like, "How have I lost that much time?" Bono says, "Deg is much higher." By the way, Deg is degradation, tire degradation. "And we lost time behind Vettel." Hamilton says, "I'm out of the race now. If the Deg is that massive, why didn't you give me hard tires? Can you guys please explain a bit? I'm basically out of the race, a pit stop behind." And the response is, "Vettel is guaranteed a two stop, so we can see how this comes to us." Which I don't really understand that explanation. You guys?
So I think at this stage in the race, I believe there are a couple of other drivers who are on hards, but they're all at the back of the pack. It's like Magnussen, Giovinazzi, Raikkonen, and I think Grosjean are all on hards. And they basically have like hardly any data for how the hards are going to go because they didn't have free practice 3 and the weather was a little bit weird on Friday. So there's a lot of like question marks, basically. I think what Bono was saying was that they think the degradation was too high also on the hards, and they know that there's going to be a second pit stop for Vettel, who's going to have to go on mediums. So if the deg is so high on the softs at the moment that he's already pitted, he'll have to pit again and then stretch out his medium gap. And what they'll be able to do is go on softs for the last stint. And Hamilton, I don't know, I always think he's better at managing tire wear than most of them probably. So I think that's probably what he's trying to do is look, the race will come to us. We're gonna put them on that, put the pressure on Vettel to sort of like eke out, you know, as much he can out of these softs. And then we'll be in a position once he's pit to be able to look at the deltas and say, okay, when is the best time to do it? So they're kind of like, to me, I feel like what they were doing is putting Hamilton in a sort of a reactionary strategy where they could watch everyone else, see how they did, and then make that last pit stop sort of based on that data.
It's really tough because I think what would probably frustrate Hamilton the most when you come away from this is they didn't really even give him the shot at doing the one stop. And I think to your point, he is very good at managing his tires. That is a skill he has developed over his career. He's become one of the really great race managers on the grid. And they didn't really give him the option of going from softs onto mediums and seeing if he could make that work with a one stop. On the other hand, how could they have done that? They had another option to maybe, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. Late in the race, they maybe could have flirted with the idea of having him stretch out those mediums to see if he got to the end. But at this moment, the other thing you could do is you could have extended that soft stint even longer, I guess. But by lap 19, Hamilton was losing a second per sector to Bottas. Ooh. Yeah. And so like at that point, you're basically at the cliff. And probably it's just going to keep getting more brutal. And so at that point, are you beginning to throw the podium into question if you're hemorrhaging that kind of time? Because, you know, at that point, if you're a second, you know, if you're losing 3 seconds a lap, basically, every lap at that point becomes really expensive to run. Like, how much are you going to make back by saving that? I don't know off the top of my head what the pit delta is at Suzuka, but like you run 3-4 laps with that kind of time bleed, and you've erased any advantage of doing a one stop. So they're kind of boxed in on that front. The question then becomes, could he have maybe somehow worked those mediums through to the end? And I'm not sure we saw him take all the possible life out of those mediums or try to do one of those heroic drives. I also don't feel like Mercedes encouraged him to do that or gave him much of an opportunity to do that. And I do wonder if there was an element of, we like the order we've got. Valtteri needs a win. He's been the driver of the weekend. We are not going to set up another one of these fights for you guys on track.
It's also worth mentioning. Sorry, you're probably going to say the same thing I'm going to say, Drew.
Yeah, because they're so close to getting the Constructors Championship. They want to bring those silver cars home.
Yeah, at one stage, I guess you got to kind of pick who you're racing. Like, are they racing Vettel or are they racing Valtteri? Because, you know, if Hamilton's racing Vettel, then also that takes Vettel, his eye off of Valtteri and makes him look back at Hamilton a bit. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, team strategy-wise, I think it probably worked out for them. Maybe not so good for Hamilton. I love that at this stage, we've basically not seen Valtteri for, like, 20 laps as well.
Right.
He's just doing his thing.
Speaking of tire wear, we got some new graphics this week.
Yeah,
which I really like.
I don't know.
Them. Why do you like them?
Because it seems fake. Like, where are they getting this data from? It looks like there's some round numbers. I was like, 20%? Really? All those tires are 20%? Huh.
So it's what they give you in... So it's interesting. In the F1 game that Codemasters makes, they give you two pieces of data. They give you... rate wear percentage, which I always thought it was a gamey abstraction of the state of your tires. I was now like, I don't know necessarily how you have that information. On the other hand, the thing to remember is it's not just the teams with this information. Pirelli has pretty detailed specs on these tires and a lot of information. So probably there is like some pretty well-known math about how these things perform across a race distance that Pirelli is supplying. And within a certain error bar, when you have that data that says that tire has 20% left to it before it begins to completely fail as a tire, you can probably take that to the bank a little bit. On the other hand, it is kind of suspiciously precise when so much about tire performance seems to be about, carcass temperature versus, tread temperature, etc.
And tire health is a bigger conversation too, right? With like flat spotting and blistering and like all of these different things. There's so much like, I don't know.
I wonder if it's some like combination of the projected life of a tire plus the telemetry telling you what the tire temperature is. Like this, because you'll see the wear be different on different tires, which we know, is accurate. Or we know that it's different per tire because of the way that circuits are designed, right? Like a counterclockwise circuit means that the tires on the right side will wear more. So I wonder if it's just like, well, we know these are pretty old tires based on Pirelli specs, and this one has been the hottest for the race, so color that one a little more orange.
Maybe it was the wording. There was something like so specific about like, this is the tire wear. Like, if you're saying like projected tire, like lifespan or something, I guess maybe that's a bit wordy.
Yeah.
It just seemed a little bit funny. I also kind of felt like, shouldn't the teams be doing the work to figure out each other's tire wear a bit more? Like, do we necessarily need that? Like, I'm sure Amazon.
I think it's really helpful for the audience.
That
means that when a driver's tires are showing like 20% and they're still holding off, Lewis Hamilton, that becomes an even more incredible feat. Rob, you're laughing.
Hypersofts had to die so that the tire wear percentage could live.
Exactly. Which C is this?
No, I'm with Drew on this one. I like it. I think it is a decent abstraction to sort of unpack what people are talking about when they're discussing tire wear. I'm sure the teams do have more advanced data they're using. I mean, I would not be surprised if there's somebody out there with a freaking IR camera pointing it at other cars as they go by, being like, okay, that's what his brakes and tires are doing right now.
Whatever happened to the heat camera? I missed the heat camera.
That was good times.
Remember that when they did the overlay when you'd have it over? I guess has the halo just gotten in the way or something?
I'll see if I can find footage of that.
Yeah. I wonder, it might also be that everything runs so hot now. But you can always control the gradient, but it just maybe heat is no longer as informative as it used to be. Because like,
in
used
fairness,
to be,
it always just used to kind of show the same. It was never that. It wasn't like you were looking at the heat being like, oh, that tire is specifically warm on the outside there.
Yeah. But I, as soon as that graphic came up and they're like, Hamilton's right side tires are down 20%, they were telling him to box like 10 seconds later. So I don't know.
Actually, they show it again at a pretty interesting point. But before we get there, there's a good double pass on the start finish straight on lap 27. Hülkenberg and Perez scoot by Kvyat into 9th and 10th. It's pretty cool. A little 1-2 action. Lap 31, Vettel takes his second pit stop. So now it's Bottas in first and Hamilton second. Leclerc still moving up the field, gets by on the inside of Gasly at Spoon for 6th, which is a nice and clean move. Lap 37, Bottas then takes his second pit stop, leaving Hamilton in first. And then Hamilton pits 5 laps after Bottas with medium tires that the graphics are telling us are at 70%. So Ted Kravitz also, I think, agrees with you, Rob's, Danny, saying for Mercedes, it's all about the Constructors' Championship today, I think, because with that 70% projected life in the tires here for lap 42, we're 9 laps from the finish. 11. Could Hamilton have eked him out? We'll never know.
Yeah, I mean, the other element here is that, you know, where is the competition here in the front? Because Vettel and Bottas haven't gone toe-to-toe. Hamilton hasn't caught up with Vettel. And there is, I guess, not many laps left. And the big lingering question on this race is whether or not Hamilton will be able to grab second. And then we sort of...
Right, yeah.
You know, he's probably not going to catch Vettel, but with enough, you know, laps left to maybe eke up on Vettel. And, you know, the straight line speed of the Ferrari has been good, but the Mercedes have had decent grip exiting the corners as well. So it's not like it was, you know, there was a shot, was it? I think it was when Leclerc overtook Verstappen, which was maybe within the first 10 laps or something, obviously, because Verstappen retired on 15 or something. You could see the Ferrari performance. You could just see like, oh, it's a different beast. It's gobbling up everyone else. I mean, basically Leclerc's entire race was him just gobbling people up.
Yeah.
But that wasn't happening with the Mercs. The Mercs were able to hold their own on this track. So that was kind of the last lingering question, was whether or not, you know, all things being equal, let's now see if Hamilton's able to actually get past them.
Yeah, but they trade potentially holding on to second and maybe being passed by Vettel for new tires in third place to chase down Vettel.
Right, yeah.
So it's an interesting trade-off. Hamilton then, go ahead.
I thought Valtteri was probably screwed. Like, because the gap was not coming down real well after Valtteri's second stop. For a while there, like, he was 13 seconds, I think, behind Hamilton. Now, admittedly, they were both dealing with different pods of traffic, but Valtteri, even on fresh, like fresh tires, was pretty slowly taking time out of Hamilton. Around lap 42, which is when Hamilton was told to box, like, you finally started to see meaningful chunks of time start to come off of Hamilton. But at the same time, I think that it was still like a 9-second gap, I want to say, and that had been still slowly getting clawed down. Let's look what that gap was real quick. Lap 42, Valtteri. Lap 41, the gap was 8.3. Lap 42, the gap was down to 5. So maybe that was the cliff, but that might have also been Hamilton slowing to enter the pits. I don't know. But yeah,
where was that time? Is that on Race Fans?
Yeah.
Who was it that almost the flat spot on the way? I mean, lots of people flat spot on the way into pits. Who was it who slowed down sharply? Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was sweet. It was very, love to basically do a handbrake turn into the pits. Yeah. But yeah, so like, I don't know. To me, I did wonder, could he have made those last if they told him up front, like, hey, man, it's on you. We think this is nearly impossible to pull off, but if you want to try it, go ahead. They just didn't really give him that option. I don't know. Again, the weird thing about the cliff is once you hit it, it's too late. The time goes away from you so fast that, like, you're barely able to get through a lap. But, yeah.
I mean, he would have probably retained third at least, you know, in that instance. Because what was the gap between him and fourth? It was a Sainz, I think, is in fourth at this stage. Everyone's basically hoping that a couple of the cars in front crash or have to retire. Because there's a bunch of really young upstarts who are, like, sitting in the wings on fourth, fifth, and sixth, who would be cool to see on podiums. Yeah, I guess we also don't want to push Bottas into Vettel, you know, if him and Hamilton end up slowing each other down a bit.
Yeah, so Hamilton does set to work on Vettel, trying to chase him down. Vettel, by the way, is on medium tires. Hamilton's on those new softs. And by lap 51, Hamilton is close enough for DRS and tries it on the start-finish straight. But Vettel covers the inside of turn one, and that is enough to defend against Hamilton.
With the help of Danny Kvyat, who basically got in everyone's way.
True.
Yeah.
Sort of. I don't think he was in. So when I saw that, I definitely thought Vettel made sure he was in the way. Like, I thought Vettel, like, Vettel approached Danny at that point in the race like a runner tagging up in baseball. Like, he made sure that he was right behind that dude as they entered that straight, and then he had the DRS and he was gone. And at that point, like, there's nothing Hamilton, like, both cars with DRS, there's nothing that Hamilton's going to be able to do.
Well, Hamilton had closed the gap because in the preceding corners up to the straight, I guess I know what you mean. I think Vettel maybe caught Danny a little bit earlier than he would have liked, because the gap reduced. Hamilton was way closer leaving that chicane than he had been at any other time. But yeah, you're right. He got that DRS and it made all the difference, especially with the straight line speed that Ferrari was holding all weekend.
And especially because the race ended a little bit earlier than everybody thought. So it wasn't quite as confusing on screen as it actually was in reality, but the race is supposed to go to 53 laps. On lap 53, we see Perez in the wall, crashing from 10th place after attempting a move on the outside of Gasly. This moves his teammate up into 10th place, Stroll. However, after the race, we learned that the checkered flag panel, which is a little light board, I think near the start-finish line, activated one lap early.
You're kidding.
On lap 52, which means that the race was officially called a lap early, which means Perez's crash is a non-factor. So he finished 9th, Hülkenberg 10th, and Stroll 11th.
Did any of the drivers say that they saw it? Did any of the drivers react differently because of it?
I think Vettel did not see it, but they called him on the radio and said the race is ending one lap early. So it used to be that the physically waved flag is the only thing that stops the race. That's the last, that's the final straw. But as racefans.net points out, last year's Canadian Grand Prix was accidentally ended a lap early because the checkered flag was shown too soon.
We remember it was a guest, right? Yeah.
Following that, the FIA changed the rules for 2019, which stated the checkered light panel, not the flag, would be the official signal that the race had finished. Different article still on racefans.net. Vettel, who said he hadn't noticed the early electronic flag signal, believes F1 should go back to using a traditional checkered flag.
V12s and real flags.
Yeah, exactly. Vettel is the boomer of this this grid. Good. It was good back in the old days. There was gremlins in all the machines this week.
FIA race director Michael Massey confirmed, again, just from racefans.net, quote, "It was a system error. What the exact part of it was, I can't tell you here and now. It's something that we'll look into and obviously rectify."
Congratulations, Valtteri Bottas.
Yes, Bottas wins. And crucially, Hamilton takes the fastest lap, which is significant because with that point, Mercedes wins their sixth Constructors' Championship in a row, along with the sixth Mercedes driver winning the championship. Bottas and Hamilton are still in it, but that means that a Mercedes driver will win. That has never been done before. Six Constructors and drivers in a row.
It's also funny because it doesn't feel like the Ferrari era. It feels more fun than that. But I guess maybe that's just my own subjective thing. But
yeah, I'd be interested to hear from people. Like the Ferrari era, the Red Bull era. You look at it on paper and it's not, it doesn't look fun. But honestly, it feels, you're right, a lot more. Maybe we've just been lulled into this sense of normalcy.
Maybe it's the way they're broadcasting it. I feel like we're seeing more of other parts of the track maybe, or maybe we've gotten to know those drivers better than we did in the past with stuff like Drive to Survive. And it's, you know, I don't know. That's certainly been a factor for me, is really getting to know a lot of those younger drivers on Twitch.
Well, you know, it's, I think there's a couple things. There've been different state, like Mercedes dominance has had a different feel at different stages. Like this year and last year in particular, that dynasty seemed a little bit shaky with regard to Ferrari. Now, Ferrari came on too late this year to really mount a serious challenge. But last year, certainly Hamilton's championship prospects seemed to be very much in doubt. And Valtteri was having a bad year. So suddenly, like, a lot of things seemed possible last year. And again, it's said maybe had it a little more together. I don't know. Maybe this goes differently. Mm. But then before that, we also had Hamilton and Rosberg had two seasons where they were really at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you had like a pretty exciting battle happening there. And Rosberg managed to get one of those championships, which is distinct from the Red Bull era, which was, there's like, I'd say the Red Bull era might have been the most boring for me because what have we seen, like, what have we learned that Vettel is good at in the last couple of years? If he gets a lead and he has a car that he feels has a material advantage over all the other cars around him, he does like kind of activate God mode. And he just drives away with the race. So if you know you can put the car in the front, and then you just need to manage the race, Vettel's your guy. It was like 3 years of that. Mm-hmm. And the only people who were able to sort of mount a challenge, Mark Webber, but it is tough to win a championship if you can't start a race. And so like that challenge fizzled every year. And Schumacher killed all his challengers. very much the Saturn of Formula One.
Bottas, after the race, I thought this was funny. He comes on the radio and says, "James, it's Valtteri. Well done."
Perfect.
Yeah. And that's Japanese Grand Prix. Valtteri Bottas on top. Sebastian Vettel, second place. Lewis Hamilton rounding out the podium behind them. Alex Albon brings it home in fourth place. Carlos Sainz in fifth, and Daniel Ricciardo in sixth.
Mm.
Speaking of overtaken, Charles Leclerc finished in seventh place, coming back from his early morning pit stop.
Oh, wait.
What's up?
He finished in sixth. He was penalized down to seventh. We forgot about, did we mention this part? He had a 20-second gap in sixth place. He had a 20-second gap. And Ferrari was like, hey, come on in, man. We're going to get you. We're going to put you on sauce. You're going to set fastest lap. Yeah. And he was like, I don't know about that. It doesn't seem to make sense to me. And they were like, we love it. Come on in.
It was so weird. Do we have a gap in traffic for you?
No.
Yeah. Oh, God. That was the weird cherry on top. I was watching it live and chatting with folks on Discord. And they were like, everyone was like, what? Like, is this just to neg? Like, Mercedes getting a Constructors' Championship? What was even funnier was if, because he ended up not getting the fastest lap.
Right.
What would have been even funnier is if he did get the fastest lap, because that lap was then taken away. So it would have been even better if that happened that way,
The final lap?
Because it was the final lap is when he tried.
The 53rd lap? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, I didn't realize that, but you're right. He finished in sixth place, and because he was because he took the time to make a pit stop, that 15 second penalty post race put him behind Daniel Ricciardo. So you're right. He went down from sixth to seventh. Behind him, Pierre Gasly, Sergio Perez, and Nico Hülkenberg rounding out the top 10. Outside that, we got an 11th place Stroll, followed by Kvyat, Norris, Raikkonen, Grosjean, Antonio Giovinazzi, Magnussen, Russell, Kubica, and the retired Max Verstappen.
That's a race.
Mm. Driver standings. Lewis Hamilton, 338 points. Valtteri Bottas, 274. It's quite a mountain to climb there, Valtteri. Charles Leclerc has 221. Max Verstappen with 212. Tied with Sebastian Vettel for fourth place.
Wow.
Sainz with 76, Gasly with 73, Albon's got 64, Ricciardo with 42, Nico Hülkenberg in 10th place with 35, tied with Sergio Perez. Norris is in 12th with, three-way tie.
Three-way, yep.
Hülkenberg and Perez and Norris all have 35 points in 10th place. Then we've got Kvyat with 33, Raikkonen with 31, Magnussen with 20, Stroll with 19, Grosjean with 8, Antonio Giovinazzi with 4, Kubica has 1, and Russell has 0. Mercedes has clinched the constructor standings with 612. Ferrari's got 433. Red Bull's got 323. McLaren still in a solid fourth place with 111 points. Renault creeping up there with 77, although that may not stand. We'll get to that. Scuderia Toro Rosso, 59 points. Racing Point's got 54. Alfa Romeo's got 35. Genos and team, 28 points.
Wow.
Williams with
20. A Haas is just
imploding.
It gets worse with every race. You just see how much they're lagging behind.
Yeah.
Same drivers next year.
Indeed.
Woo.
Consistency. The devils, you know. I guess one more thing here from the Japanese Grand Prix. The stewards explained why Vettel avoided a jump start penalty. This also from racefans.net. Vettel's car moved before the red lights went out, but the Ferrari driver stopped his car before the start was given. According to the stewards, he did not infringe the rules because he was not moving at the moment the lights went out. Interestingly, as somebody found on Reddit, he did the exact same thing from the exact same place in 2010.
You're kidding. In Suzuka.
Yeah, in Suzuka. I will link that in the show
in
notes.
In seconds?
He started in first on pole position. Same as this race.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Wow. Huh.
Yeah, it's wild.
There you go. Old habits die hard.
Yeah, and then I guess I can take this Racing Point protest. So during the Japanese Grand Prix, Racing Point, I guess, noticed something about Renault because they filed a complaint with the stewards, alleging that Renault is using on their cars a, quote, preset lap distance dependent brake bias adjustment system, which Race Fans points out is forbidden by Article 11.1.4 of the technical regulations, which state any change to or modulation of the brake system may not be preset. The FIA technical department's representative has been ordered to conduct an examination of the steering wheels and electronic control units from Daniel Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg's cars. Those parts are to be sealed and impounded. Ooh. In the meantime, stewards have issued a final race classification, but noted that Renault's finishing positions of 6th, Ricciardo, and 10th, Hülkenberg, is, quote, provisional, subject to the outcome of any decision concerning the protest. This is also something that, if they find... is indeed the case and is judged to be significantly egregious, could see Renault losing all of their points, which would be wild.
Are they saying this is something that they only noticed now, or that was only introduced for this race, or is that all still up in the air?
I think the FIA accepted this complaint after the Japanese Grand Prix.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah, so we'll be watching that one.
What a weird...
Yeah.
I guess I don't fully get the what the value of that kind of cheat would be either, because it's not dynamic. If they're saying it's preset bias adjustment based on race distance, why do you need to do that? Drivers can control the bias from inside the car. So right. you can just tell someone, like, look, like with each lap, you need to adjust the balance further back to handle tire wear until you get fresh tires or something, because of the weight transfer with the lightning fuel load. I don't know. I just don't get why you would build a system like this. It's the equivalent of an egg timer for brake bias.
So what it, I guess it, in that respect, then it's one less thing for the drivers to do.
Yeah, but it's such a trivial thing.
Do you want to explain a bit what brake bias does, Rob?
Yeah, so you can adjust where the balance of the braking force exists on an F1 car. So, like, if both sets of brakes are applying equal force, you're squarely at 50-50. The front brakes are applying the same force as the rear brakes. I don't know how that translates to an F1 car, because you do have bigger brakes and tires in the back, but in terms of where the braking balance is, it's that's sort of squarely in the middle. A lot of F1 cars put the balance forward and sort of like rely more on the front brakes to sort of slow cars on turn entry. But as the weight shifts in a car, but also because of tire wear, because of brake wear, a lot of times drivers will and can, from the cockpit, adjust that balance of their braking and adjust, like, when they hit the pedal, how much braking force is being applied by the front brakes versus how much is being applied by the rear brakes. This is a pretty old and standard system. And, yeah, it is one more thing for drivers to fuss with, but... compared to a lot of the other mode adjustments and harvesting settings they have to futz with, this is a pretty mild one. So what puzzles me about this one is you already had basically a knob that you could use to tweak bias adjustment on demand. What is outlined here doesn't sound like there was any smarts to the system. It doesn't sound like it was doing any sort of like live analysis or like real-time adjustment. It sounds like it was taking the race distance and just changing brake bias depending on how far into the race you were.
Right. It's, or maybe per lap based on how we don't like, it's still a form of automation. It's still one less thing for the driver to have to do every single lap, maybe every turn. Like, if it's preset, it might be the entire lap that's preset,
yeah,
over the course of... So, like, even though it's not dynamic, it's still basically an automated system.
Right, but...
Right, but and you've seen how much, like, the Mercedes are, like, tweaking their brake bias every single... Like, they're... You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if it's a tiny bit of help...
But what I'm saying is, even if it's automatic, it saves drivers a little bit of, like, you know... over like managerial overload in the cockpit.
Yeah.
Think about this, like what is described here sounds like you provide a pretty small benefit for totally, something that's benefit. Pretty edgy. Yeah, but that's like why, like, I do not get why you would run this risk. Like, it'd
because
be,
maybe their drivers are bad at it. Like, we don't, it doesn't, like, it doesn't, I'm totally with you. It seems like a bad hack to try and get an advantage, but it's still a hack to get an advantage. Like, it's still against the regs.
Yeah.
Because if everyone was able to do this.
No, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be penalized. I just don't get why you would run the risk of.
Yes, like, totally.
Of all the things you could do to sort of bend the rules and, like, try to get an advantage, like, this is your genius idea is. You know that
maybe because
you press
it's so
every
maybe
lap?
It's because it's so small that it's the one that they're the most likely to get away with because you do it so infrequently.
I'm wondering how Racing Point figured this out, and the most likely thing to me is they watched the onboard. Like,
yeah,
he didn't adjust his brake bias once.
Right.
It must be magic.
It does seem like a particularly stupid hill to die on, like advantage. It's the worst cheat. It's like taking a wacky race's side route that saves you half a second, but involves you jumping over a ravine.
Right. Speaking of rules, we have some changes to the 2021 stuff. This is Pirelli F1 boss Mario Isolta telling Autosport, 2021, we have big changes, a new car, new aero package, we have new tires, a new size, and so on. But they're no longer mandating that tire warmers, the tire blankets, be banned. That was proposed, but they are going back on that. He says the idea is to have a transition and remove the blankets, but over a period of time. So in 2021, we keep the blankets in order to have a reference, and then step by step, we will go in the direction of not having them. When we discussed
rear
it, I don't remember.
All right, yeah. First and rear left.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Like, half the races we're going to have? Yeah, I don't know.
Half the tire, yeah. One tire warmer a race.
Yeah, you get to pick which tire it's on.
Other penalties, Danny, speaking of things going from bad to worse over at Haas, as they're in free fall, what do you make of this?
Yeah, Gunter Steiner looking like a bunch of wankers, is that what he said?
Yep.
In the show. Yeah. Steiner specifically, I think, fined €7,500 for quote unquote stupid, idiotic steward. End quote comment. Haas team principal Gunter Steiner has been fined $7,500 by the FAA for his outburst on the radio during the Russian Grand Prix. Steiner described one of the stewards as stupid and idiotic after Kevin Magnussen was given a 5-second time penalty for rejoining the track incorrectly after going off at turn two. During the Russian Grand Prix, counting towards the FIA Formula One Championship, the panel of stewards imposed a 5-second time penalty to one of the drivers of the Haas F1 team. The team principal of the Haas F1 team, holder of an FIA super license, after the race was over, took the opportunity to make the comments on the decision during a radio message to the relevant driver. This was, "If we didn't have a stupid, idiotic steward, we would be 8. You know who is the steward. You know him. It is always the same. He just does not get any more intelligent."
Sounds like a really kind Trump of rally.
Yeah, he kept like twisting the knife. You know which one it is. Now I want to know which one it is. But yeah, he got fined for. I mean, they're allowed to do a lot of things on team radio, but I guess calling it specific stewards is maybe where they draw the line.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's Steiner could have just a little more chill, I think, in general. I think that would be like there's two things. They need to fix their car and they need Gunther to have a little more sang-froid. So the other thing that caught my eye here was that apparently, so Kubica is done with Williams at the end of this year, and this has all been voluntary, and you know, it was all framed as being pretty amicable and just kind of the right thing when all was said and done. Except that now, in the wake of Suzuka, there's like bad blood between Kubica and the Williams team, and it stems from the fact that he was testing a new wing this weekend at Suzuka. Before qualifying, they dismounted the wing from his car, and they put an old wing on, and then they sent him out for qualifying. And the way he put it was, it crossed a boundary, and it clarified some things for him, is the way he put it. And so it sort of seems like he feels like the team kind of chose to screw him at this race in general, but particularly the fairness of the shake he's gotten was, I guess, sort of crystallized for him because of this wing issue, which I get feeling miffed about that. On the other hand, literally 5 minutes later, you crashed your car.
So they said that they had this new wing for him, and then they took it off before quali. Was it given to Russell, or like was there any reason given for why they did it? Because the whole thing seemed like I don't know if they've made any comment about.
Yeah, because one reason for, you know, taking it off Kubica's car would be if it's on Russell's to compare how it went in the race from one car to the other, right? To see if it's effective. If that happened.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't like what they saw in practice. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, wouldn't he have broken the wing like 5 minutes later?
I get, unless he was driving with the wing in mind or something. I think that was what he was alluding to. Maybe that, like, he said the car was in a bad state. The problem he had was when he left the pits.
Yeah.
One of the things. So, but who knows? Maybe he just had built up a head of steam about that particular issue, and then it became part of his reasonings. That, or you know what? Maybe it was that they sent him out angry, like he was frustrated and angry with what they had done with the car, and then he had to go do qualifying, and he pushed it a little bit too hard as a result of that, like and crashed. Who knows? But
I didn't realize this. Sorry. From that same article, the conditions, he says, were tough. And on top of that, in qualifying, I had a different power steering on Friday. So the feeling on the steering wheel was completely different. I was convinced that I would make this corner without problems, but suddenly I ran off the road. That's it.
Right.
I mean, maybe that explains his radio message.
I mean, what a weird couple of races he had, with the whole getting pulled out of the last race after Russell's crash. And, you know, I bet he can't wait to see the back of them. It's so strange that Russell's outperformed him practically every race, but he's still behind him in the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah.
Even if he's getting a fair shake in the garage as well. Man, Rob's tenure at Kubica-Watts has been difficult. I think we need to...
There's been rather less to see than I hoped.
Yeah, and what has been viewable has been difficult to watch. Poor Bobby.
Well, should we view some emails, Danny?
Sure. Let's view some emails. You can help us view your emails by going to f1.cool/emails or emailing us at shiftf1podcast@gmail.com. gmail.com. I'm going to read this first one. It's from Sam, and it's about the officiating at Suzuka. And Sam's in the know. Sam's not just somebody who has a podcast. A popular internet podcast about Formula One.
Very popular.
He's got the paperwork behind it. Sam says, I'm sure you've gotten a pretty substantial number of emails about this. We did, Sam, you're correct. Once again, I'm an officially designated controversial officiating Grand Prix, but I wanted to chime in with a bit of perspective. At a previous stage of my life, I was a national level certified SCCA marshal with a permit to work kart races. That's C-A-R-T, capital letters, kart races, not K-A-R-T, as well as several other semi-pro series, plus amateur stuff. And I have to chime in that I think FIA marshals completely dropped the ball on Leclerc's damaged car. Marshals have a flag specifically for a damaged car and dangerous car, the meatball, red circle on black background. While I do not know how the FIA manages flag calls, the dragging front wing on Leclerc's car is a textbook case for the deployment of a mechanical flag. Everyone has seen that these wings are delicate and prone to sudden catastrophic disassembly when damaged. Watching the onboards, I cannot see that this wag was ever displayed to Leclerc, and that is a flaw in the management of the race. Leclerc cannot see the damaged wing, fair enough, but he absolutely should not have ignored his radioed command to pit. He should have been properly shown a mechanical lap on lap one. The marshal would then be justified in either giving him one more opportunity to pit or simply black flagging him at that corner. I should know, I've done both. As you might expect, the drivers were unhappy. Instead, the FIA seems to have hesitated, just endangering every other driver on the track. Hamilton could easily have been seriously injured or killed by the debris that took his front wing, and Norris's race was compromised due to debris damages as well. All of that could have been avoided with firm and sensible marshalling, which we seem to be lacking in these new let them fight liberation days of 29 F1 season. So thanks for that, Sam. I did have a bunch of people email in about this. Also people making note that it was dangerous for the spectators as well, if there's ever that type of debris. This track has a decent amount of runoff around the circuit, but you could certainly see in a place like Monaco or, you know, where they're a little bit tighter, in places like Canada where it's like that could be a lot more dangerous. Catch fencing is there for a reason. So yeah, I mean, this email might have been sent in prior to the actual hammer coming down post-race, but, you know, ultimately that didn't really help Hamilton.
But, yeah, and when it's for safety, it needs to be of the moment, right? I think Sam nailed it here.
And safety is on everyone's mind because of the typhoon, because of Saturday, and also because we've, you know, had a fatality at this circuit in the past 5 years. So it's, yeah, I did find it particularly strange as well, that whole thing. Drew, do you want to read this one from Michael?
Yes. Do you guys think Vettel keeps his spot on the cover of the F1 game, or does he lose it to Leclerc or Bottas? I don't think Bottas, because you got to have, I think it's one per team. I think having two drivers from the same team would be weird.
So you think Hamilton's a lock, do you think?
So I think Hamilton's a lock because he's going to win this Drivers' Championship. Okay. Let's be real. I do think Vettel loses it to Leclerc. I think Leclerc is the hotness.
Yeah. Do you think Lando gets on because of all his video game shenanigans?
I think that'd be a fun, like, when you take the cover out of the sleeve and you unfold it, Lando is there wearing his like Valentino Rossi sailor cap.
One of the things that makes me that I quite like about these sports games specifically, and I'm not really sure if it's the case over here maybe so much, but in Europe it's quite like, it changes country to country, a lot of these covers do. So like FIFA often has, you know, maybe a more recognizable player in America than it might have in Europe, and also, you know, Pro Evolution and stuff like that would change per country based on the domestic leagues and stuff. So I did some searching for other for the covers in F1 2019. On the box, I believe,
is Stroll front and center for Canada?
I don't know about Canada, but Kvyat is on with Hamilton for the Russian release.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it's on the game itself, but I saw promotional images in Poland that had Robert Kubica on for Hamilton. Which is quite badass, I thought. Rob, who do you think should be on the cover? Say there's four drivers next year. Mm. Who do you think should be on?
With that interview, not Valtteri. Like, Valtteri, you need to give people a little more if you want to be a cover athlete. You can't win Suzuka and like clinch the championship for your team and be like, yeah, it was a good day. Got to give us a little more. It's got to be Hamilton. It's got to be Max. After that, it does get a little murkier. I think it'll still be Vettel. My gut feeling is they've done this by team and points finish.
And right. You didn't just to sidestep any controversy?
Yeah, I think that's I feel like that's kind of been their that's sort of been their strategy. So,
well, if things hold, then it will be Leclerc.
Yeah. So I think that's the track we're going to be on. It's going to be Leclerc, and then it will probably will be Carlos
and then Sainz.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I'd be down to see him there.
I think another fan favorite would be easy to put Ricardo on there.
Yeah,
damaged stock at this point. Like, I'm sure it'll sit like, yeah, that's the you know, Australia New Zealand cover for that market, but
yeah,
the oceanic territories,
especially if they get their points stripped and the last of the late breakers turns out to have been
the last of the late placers.
Yeah.
Rob, do you want to read this next email?
Yeah, absolutely. Graydon, Justice for Leclerc, Gordian, writes, "Hey guys, on a recent podcast, I think y'all joked about Danny getting a custom blah license plate. So I'm at the Petit Le Mans outside Atlanta this weekend. Very fun. The IMSA primer was a big help in understanding. Thanks for that. And what do I find? I could barely believe it. Had to share. And here's a picture of a North Carolina license plate. Blah! With an exclamation point at the end."
I didn't know
you get that regulations.
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe somebody added that one. Yeah, it's this one is a BW. Is it four A's and an H? So it's, mm-hmm. is it bois or is it like bois?
Yeah, I think once you put the exclamation point, like I wonder, is it even meant like bois, or is it like, is this a musician? Is somebody who like to them, I love that chord. When you have a good blah in a trailer, that's my favorite sound.
We should probably also mention that we got a couple of tweets from people with their custom license plates. Shout out to Matt O'Day, who sent us his license plate, which is a California license plate, the same color style that I was joking or talking about getting. Who literally has BW, OAH, and 7, which is Kimmy's number. So he has literally done it. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I might be stealing Matt's thunder or just being a terrible copycat if I went for it. We also got a Joe Cariotti, who listens to the podcast, sent us a video, and he has two custom plates. The first one is Pwn Noobs, PWNOOBS, and the other one is RAD space AF. So I guess if you're gonna live that like custom plate life, you gotta go all in.
Yeah
fair play.
Regarding the exclamation point, I don't think Kimi Raikkonen has ever typed or said an exclamation point in his life.
Do you think I can fit? I was having a shit. I was taking a shit. Do you think I can fit that on?
Take out all the vowels and maybe.
IWSTK. Yeah, maybe not. This next one comes in from Peter. And Peter is in Austria. I live in Graz, Austria. Graz is the capital of the province Styria. Styria, not Syria. Styria, where the Red Bull Ring is located, and the Austrian Grand Prix takes place every year. Because Red Bull Ring is only an hour's drive away from Graz, there is a lot of stuff happening here on race weekends. There is a tram car in Red Bull F1 car design. Max Verstappen drove his F1 car through parts of the historic town last year. There is a Red Bull F1 car parked in the town square for a few days prior to the GP weekend, guarded by a mean-looking security guard. But best of all, we have our very own AlphaTauri store.
Oh, good.
And pictures of all this stuff have been included in the email. It looks like a beautiful shop. He says, I've been a listener since the very first episode. Keep up the great work. He also said, my cousin is Jochen, who's named after, you guessed it, Jochen Rindt, the Austrian race driver, F1 champion, Le Mans winner. My cousin was born a few years after Rindt's death, and my uncle was a pretty big Rindt fan at the time. So it's F1 pumping through the Austrian people's veins, it seems.
Next email is from Oh boy, here's where we hit the limits of my ability to handle Dutch names. Hoob van Oort writes,
nice, okay.
One of Mac's sponsors is a Dutch supermarket called Jumbo. They organize the Jumbo Racing Days, started out as Max Verstappen Family Days. You get tickets by shopping in these supermarkets and buying stuff like loads of Red Bull or other brands they try to market, like soap or expensive toilet paper. Gotta market that expensive toilet paper.
Hey, that's nothing to skimp on, man.
But this isn't just the premium. I'm imagining something like even above like the softest Cottonelle, like no, flake. Only this.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, so it is, if you go to the Circuit Zandvoort Netherlands website and look up Jumbo Rosdagen, you will find information about this, but it does mean that Max and Pierre Gasly drove a demo there this year, and of course Ricardo was there in 2018 with David Coulthard. Max also drove there in 2016 and 2017, so all those guys have driven F1 cars at Zandvoort.
There you go. Interesting to see if they have any advantage over everyone else, or if they just have a lot of expensive toilet paper at home, I guess.
I suspect doing a few practice laps doesn't tell you shit. Like a demo like that, like it, because the imagine the consequence of like binning the car at the Jumbo Rosdagen at Zandvoort, right? Like you crash into the toilet paper barrier and just completely wreck it, and now the mechanics have to fix it. No, my guess though is, I would wonder if the younger drivers maybe will have an advantage because they will probably immediately load this shit into their race sims of choice and begin getting with that track well in advance of a lot of the more senior drivers. I don't think will have encountered it.
Right. Yeah. You can get it on iRacing right now. Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. Should I take this last one here?
Do it. This one's for you, actually.
All right. Sam says, hey there, just finishing listening to your Japanese Grand Prix pre-race pod, and at one point, one of you mentioned that on F1 TV, while using the onboard feature, you can't sync broadcast audio. You actually can! Click the little headphone button, and there are selections for English, French, Dutch, German, and Spanish broadcast, as well as the team radio. Hope this is helpful. I am going to try this right now.
Yeah, because I didn't notice this myself during the race, but I have also like multiple times been befuddled by the UI on F1 TV. So
I watched like a quarter of the race just looking at the data.
Oh my God. We had
felt
a fantastic...
I saw the Matrix.
Like I said, we get so many emails every week, and I read every one of them. Thank you all for sending them in. I'm sorry we don't get to all of them. There was one that was somebody who managed to sync up three separate, I think they had a laptop, the television, and maybe their phone, and they said that they had like multiple, they had the like live screen, but the problem was you have to sync it at the start. So you have to hit press play on both and get them both up, and it means you can't pause at any stage unless you got to resync all over again. So
right.
Fair play. Good commitment, but you can log on two machines, F1 TV, to do that, or I guess to do anything. I mentioned any joy, Drew?
Trying.
This is real
yes.
science.
Okay, I am watching Danny Ric's race about halfway through, and I click the headphone, and now I hear Crofty awesome. Talking about Lewis Hamilton. Okay.
Shame it doesn't. I guess it's just reloading the page. It's not actually changing feed in the app, so it doesn't know what you're listening to. So I guess that's why it doesn't default. Because if you're listening in French, then it would be an awful UI case if you clicked on that and it popped up in English. But it's a bit of a shame. Like other systems, I know, like UFC, for instance, had a multiple camera thing. I'm not sure if they still do, but years ago when I used to do the pay-per-views, they'd swap, but that was all within the same app, so they knew what you were doing and where you were coming from, and they could retain audio and stuff. So I guess I used to build websites with video on them, so it's interesting to me.
Oh my God, that data screen is wild.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's weird that you can't. I mean, it's strange that when you pull up the data screen, it's basically a video feed. It's not JavaScript or something. Like, I want to watch the race and put the data below it. But you're right. I think the only way to do that currently is to load up, you know, a second monitor or a private tab in another window. I guess they're coming along on this. You know? All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks, Sam. Let's take a dip into fantasy land for a second. Ooh. Here. We've got the top five finishers in our Shift F1 Fantasy League, which you can join by following the link in the show notes. Japan, tied for fourth place. We've got Better, Stronger, Faster, and Shuey. And in third place, WRC is more competitive. and then tied for first, Vegeta GT, or Vegeta GT. There's two T's there. Also tied for first place, Dr. Vettel and Mr. Signs.
That's good.
That's good. Really, I like that strong. One a lot.
Yeah.
I like that. Overall, points leaders, however, in the Shift F1 official league, number five, St. Giovese Racing Team. Number four, Jacked Up Racing, which I think is new to the top five here. We got Dragon Ball GT in third place. Second is To the Future Part 3. And still in first, only 16 points ahead, however, of second, Rich Volt F1 Energy Team, Paintwork pending. So that's us around the internet. Shall we take it around the world, Denny?
It's time to race around the world. Yeah.
Well, we got the NASCAR Xfinity Series at the Kansas Speedway for the Kansas Lottery 300. MotoGP is at the Twin Ring Motegi in Aume, Haga District, Tochigi Prefecture,
Quality
Japan.
Prefecture.
The NHRA is in Ennis, Texas for the AAA Texas Fall Nationals. And we got NASCAR.
Oh my.
They're also at the Kansas Speedway for a playoff round called the Hollywood Casino 400.
Wait, where is that on?
Kansas.
Okay.
You know, Hollywood.
Sure. Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood, Kansas.
Okay, we got the casino and the lottery happening in Kansas. But Hollywood because NASCAR goes Hollywood.
Yeah.
This week in the F1 Shift F1 Patreon, I also watched the making of special on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
For Days of Thunder, and it starts with the most 90s intro graphics that just it flashes NASCAR goes Hollywood, like those three words, like all over place in different fonts. It's freaking weird. But yeah, that's not a lot of racing this weekend. Two NASCAR championships, MotoGP, and NHRA. That's it. We're winding down. But
there's too many leaves on the track this time of year.
That's right. Yes. And the cars change color. It's so beautiful. I guess that's it. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/shiftf1. Don't have a race this weekend. We will be back next week for the pre-Mexican Grand Prix episode. And again, we will have, I believe on Friday, we're posting that Days of Thunder episode. So stay tuned for that. Anything else, Rob?
Nope. Just kind of bittersweet. Here's the racing around the world tapers off as we enter fall. It does mean that, you know, as the leaves are falling and the Ferraris fall through the fall from their qualifying place down through the grid, we are nearing the end of our magical F1 journey.
And Danny?
Yeah, I you know, we're into the last quarter now, so the last season, as it were, of F1. But we were talking about, like, you know, what we're going to do for our upcoming Patreon only podcasts and looking towards other racing series, and you reminded us that Formula E is just always around the corner.
That's right.
This time of year, it's, you know, one door closes and another opens.
That's right. They start in November. So stay tuned for that. All right, that's it for us. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.